because, like, I couldn't figure out, because it said...
To get to the hotel or this room?
This room.
Okay.
Because I'm just like, they're like, because I walked in, and the guy's like, oh, it's on the lobby level over there.
Yeah.
And then I get here, I'm upstairs, and I'm like, hello? Where the hell am I? And I'm staring at the map, and I see where the salon room is.
But you can't
get there. I can't figure out, and the thing is, though, is it says you are here, but it doesn't say you are here up or down from where you want to be.
Okay.
So I'm like, but because the sign up here says down to the lower level, but on the thing it says lobby level. So there was no corresponding, what the fuck?
Help.
And so I went down these escalators, went like, okay, because it's supposed to be on the
floor. I definitely, like, ended up in laundry rooms before, and like,
I know, because I'm thinking, okay, well, if on the same level is a pool, and the pool kind of needs to be on ground level, I'm going to go down.
I think that's a good call.
God. Okay, I have my computer, but it looks like you don't need my computer.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's all, you know, all set. I was just making sure that it worked.
Okay.
And it does.
Good.
Should be set. And I just loaded the whole presentation under Natalie's name. So
okay. It says that Jennifer and Alice don't have PowerPoints. Because it's just the one.
Because that's true.
Okay. All right. Well, I totally did not realize that Julie, I mean, she told me, but I didn't connect the fact that Julie is leaving today.
I know.
If you want to come out with my grandma and me, I was going to call Ramon to see if you want to come out too. We're going to a Mexican restaurant in La Jolla.
Oh, adorable.
Yeah. So if you're up for it, that's cool.
Yeah.
But if not, that's cool.
I would have can have some really cool stuff on the outcome,
yeah.
but you can't be tied to some sort of grant timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely a message.
I guess if you were like doing a PhD, it would work out well. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you've got your own deadlines you want to get done.
Yeah. Yeah.
But realistically, you don't kind of have to. So, so that was probably the best time to do anything.
Yeah.
Well, I
want to
go next.
Yeah, it was excellent. I definitely recommend it. And it was, I mean, just like a really solid, interesting.
then everybody's friends and family and stuff.
Yeah.
It was just insane. And so I just walked across the bridge.
That's so funny.
So yeah, we could walk pretty quickly. But there's an older guy in my family who was like 70.
Yeah.
And he was like, he was walking slow because he was old, not because he was like the Santa Maria.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
was
so were you, how did you feel now?
I'm actually a lot better than I thought. Yesterday, was I was like limping.
Yeah.
Like, totally limping. Like just, like I'd get up and I'd be like this and sitting down to go to the bathroom. I was like, falling asleep. But but then today I was expecting it to be worse because I reset it was the second, like the first 48 hours is really bad.
Uh-huh.
And it's that second day that it's the worst. But I think that was yesterday for me.
Good.
Just because today, when I get up, I'm not limping right away.
Yeah.
After I walked for a while yesterday, it's a limp would go, but it hurts. But now I just get up and it hurts, but it's not like I'm not limping.
Was the plane bag off or was it?
It's just sad as I thought. Like getting up out of the chair and stuff was hard, but during the first leg, I had two, like, 3.5 hour rides, so it wasn't like a huge long stretch. And I got up in the middle of the first leg and walked up and down a little bit. And I was so mad because I forgot my medal. And there was like a whole bunch of people, like when I was in line to get onto the plane, or get security, yeah, there was a lady with a medal. I was like, oh, I forgot my medal. And she's like, I'm like, you should wear that for 2 weeks. So I'm like, I'm gonna. And then all these people had their Marine Corps Marathon shirt on. I could have at least worn my shirt. And so I was just like, man. Maybe they'll just know because I'm limping every day.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, there's a couple of people who gave me looks like, hey, I know.
Wow. That's awesome.
It was very cool. So I'm planning on doing it next year.
Are you?
Yeah. That one, I want to get into the New York one, but I'll definitely do the Marine Corps if I don't get into New York.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to try to do New York every year because of the lottery.
Yeah, totally.
So I'll do that until the novelty of it runs off.
And then I'll just
feel like
it in.
But the weather was great, so I think that if the weather sucked or something like that, that it wouldn't be as much fun. So, I might have just had a, like the person was like, we're just going to let you have a fun. Yeah. It's so much easier though when it's nice out. Otherwise you just look at the
food. Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, that was very good. And I understand why people say that having a big house and a nice house is very possible. But Julia did the San Diego one.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was a music concert. When the bands play, it's so cool. There were some bands that were on our course too.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah,
I feel like
yeah, exactly.
That's a ton.
Yeah,
that's really cool. I think that's
I'm Heidi Deutsch.
You're Heidi. Hi, I'm Jen.
Hi, Jen.
Nice to meet you. We've got all of the PowerPoint set up already.
Okay.
It's just one presentation that we'll start. So we'll just click through so we don't have to go up and down.
So last camera
there
is going to be. Okay.
You're going to be last because of the improvement
sure.
part of it. So
okay.
Are you all ready?
I'm nervous here real quick.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Yeah, I was going to say that I had our Project Public Health Ready team review my slide. They're like, where'd you get this information? So they fixed it for me.
Oh, okay.
So,
very good.
Yeah, and I'm not sure who all from that project will be here or not.
Okay.
So, but you all will be up here.
Okay.
Basically, I'm going to take up hopefully less than 15 minutes, but probably around 15 minutes to kind of introduce the session, but then I'm introducing each of the tools.
Okay.
And after I introduce a tool, I'll introduce you all as the
okay.
person speaking about that
sure.
approach. So.
All right.
Yep. And then I'll sit down, and then you all can come up, but I won't be going up and down. So
okay.
It's kind of that way. So you all
right.
are going to follow each other.
Very good.
Okay. So, and yeah, and I'll just sit here.
This was the hardest room to find. I was like, because it said level one. So I go up to level one, what I thought was level one.
I know.
But that was floor one.
Yeah.
I guess. And so then I came back down, and then I'm like wandering around. I'm like, where?
Here's I
through
did the same thing. Did you do that door that kind of looks like you go into the back rooms of this
right.
room? I did the same thing.
And I was like, and finally some lady saw me, and I was like, where
wow.
in the world?
Yeah. I know, I couldn't even find anybody to ask. I'm like wandering around aimlessly. I'm like, well, somebody will tell me if
I know,
I'm not
like,
to be here. If
I'm going up the escalator, down the escalator. I'm like, oh my god, where are we going? No, what is it? I have no other interests or I'm not being paid by anything.
Oh yeah, I took out your disclosure slide and
oh, okay.
I just put one slide at the beginning, so I'll just go over that so you all don't have to
okay.
do that.
No, that's fine. They made it sound like the age they were like.
I know.
Awesome. Is the copy of the PowerPoint back there?
Back there?
Yeah.
I don't think so. We don't have a copy of the full PowerPoint back there, do we? Oh, we do. Okay.
Well,
I
see it. And I took out your disclosure slide, so I just put one at the very beginning.
That's great.
And I just said we're all disclosing if you have a thing.
Yeah, I've been a couple presentations where everybody had one. Like,
yeah. Our coworker Julie, I did that for her presentation.
Yeah.
Right after this one. That's smart.
So
yeah.
You know, it's not faster, and I'm not sure.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm Alice.
Oh, hi.
I thought you were just an early. No, I was early, but
an early view.
Yeah. Man, these chairs are heavy. And you're from
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
From
you're
from Kansas.
Okay,
yep.
I mean, I'll email it either way, but if you don't want to grab more paper right now, then that's...
Didn't you already email it?
I think I did attach it to an email.
You did.
I'll take a set just to start noting. Work on it. Yeah.
What is it? It was listed in here, the per diem rate and everything.
Yeah, exactly. On here it has the per diem rate for each meal, and then attached is the policy, and that has some other info.
Receipts, I have them all. If is this a combined amount too, or is this strictly per meal?
The 12, 18, and 29. Mm-hmm. You can claim all of those just straight across. Those don't require any receipts.
Okay.
And then anything extra that's over $25 requires receipts. So yeah, I would just do that. And then if you have anything that went above, that's
great. You're doing Project Pelican. Have you done that as a region or just as a?
We did it as a region.
Did you?
And it was the year there were like 50 applicants and only four that year. Eventually, seven submitted and four got it.
Okay.
So it was like, it was so.
We thought about doing that as a region too. We just haven't taken the steps to do it. But now it's gone under revision. Is that?
It's going under revision right now. So I think by next spring it'll be different. But yeah, it was a lot of work. So, and you know, it always falls on the head of one person, which was myself for our region, and so it was. But I mean, we learned a lot. We came a long way because of it. So we're so far ahead now, and
that's great.
Which it's almost a hindrance though in some parts, because when we're working with the rest of our partners in the state, like all the other partner agencies, they're so far.
Are you guys home rule state?
Mm-hmm.
You are so. Yes, it does. Now, does your state have? Do you guys have like matching capacities or mirrored capacities with your state health department?
No.
Well, yeah, we don't either.
Yeah, our state is frustrating. And the locals are always screaming that like we need you to do this. I think they just take that logic or like you're home. We can't force you to do anything.
Something to go on.
Right?
Something to start with, please.
Right? So. And also, we as like the program coordinators in the various regions always come together to develop the templates statewide and, you know, do all the work to pass it on to the local. So at least there's some statewide standardization. But
right.
Yeah.
So how many regions are within your state?
Okay.
Right now there are 12.
Oh, really? We have 15.
Which was okay. But then the state health department thinks that's too many. So the next year they want to slow down to 5. My whole day, if it's not broke, we're working fine, everything's working fine.
They just have to let
it happen.
Right?
Yeah.
Very true.
Alright, I'm going to run to the restroom. Sneak out right here.
Is this what we're changing slides with?
You know, I think you can do that or...
Yeah, or the keyboard.
Or the keyboard.
Okay. Yeah.
All
right. This one looks like it'll work. Okay.
It might be easier to just have that there.
Yeah, totally.
I know, and I don't know enough about your project, so I'm very interested to hear all about it.
Yeah, it's been good. It's definitely been challenging. We're kind of at the point right now where a
understand that it's just incorporated into your diet.
Hi. Hi. Hi, Natalie. Nice to meet you.
Hi, I'm Jen.
Yes, nice to meet you.
Did you find the room
okay?
I know how it was like on the
funny session in the book. I think it's always so unfortunate sessions given the last minute. There's no description.
Yeah. But they have it for a long time, so I don't know why.
I think it was non-going.
Oh, that's right. I remember that now.
I know, I was saying, do I sign up or not?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
okay, sorry.
It wasn't for this. So
yeah.
Sorry.
How are you?
Good.
Oh, no, it's just,
have you been here long? Because of all the cupboards, I was really trying to say, and then I normally go over to the nature preparedness classes, but not APHA, just because I'm preparing this, so there's so much more there.
Right.
So they wouldn't have liked to have funded this.
Did you go this year to nature?
Just because, well, you know, because my focus is so, right, it's just. Your project, because I don't know much about it, so I'm very eager to hear your brand.
Thank you.
couple of days. Well, you guys are getting hit today. You guys are getting hit today with a cold weather back home.
Is that right?
No
kidding.
I'm
like,
right now.
Snow. Get it? Where? Out back here?
It just showed all over New England.
It's brutal.
Sorry, I wanted to introduce myself. I'm Penny Davis. I work with Nate.
Oh, hi. Nice to meet you.
I'm Jennifer.
I think we are all the same.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Okay, so the name?
Okay, great.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks. No, it's not. I know, we just had a cold front through the whole Midwest. It's like 35 degrees in Ohio right now. If they just showed on Good Morning America, they showed the whole New England states all just snow, rain, blah.
Oh, good.
Just a mess all over.
The fog? Oh, yeah.
Right.
And a one-bedroom apartment is $600,000.
And a gallon of milk is about $1.50 more here.
And gas
than
is still over $3 a gallon. And we're paying $2.20. So.
You're paying $2.20?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. No, ours is
where
dropping.
Where
is
like in D.C. where we are?
Still?
I don't drive, so I don't buy gas.
I don't know. I always wonder, like, okay, what makes it for? Yeah. It's pumping my own gas out of my backyard.
Good morning,
James.
How are you?
I'm well.
Good.
How are you?
Great. Very good.
It will be interesting.
Audio visual guys, everything loaded up okay?
You can use this or this.
Okay.
I just stuck the mouse up there, or you can use the arrow keys.
I can do
that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Waukesha. Waukesha.
Okay, that's how Waukesha. I was going to pronounce it, but I wanted to double check. So I'm glad you asked.
Tell me what it
said. Because when I first read it, I was like,
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, different. We have all the Indian in Waukesha.
I have it highlighted. Yeah, true.
And true, you say
Waukesha.
Then you'll be like a local.
Yeah. Confused in terms of here's this student group. How are you? Good. How are you doing? Hi. Gary Collins.
Hi, Gary. Also, my partner, Jeff.
Hi. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Oh, my gosh.
Looks like you've got a good session going here.
Yeah, I'm surprised that we have
the
early in the morning. It's a little difficult to find.
Yeah, it is a little difficult.
Yeah.
We'll sit in for a while.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Sure. You're about. I'll show a couple minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
do. Only mine's like 18 minutes.
Oh my gosh. How much? 18
minutes. I have to my husband said all the clocks in the house come in this room about 10 fast. So like, and then once I figure it out, I'm like, oh, 18 minutes fast. Then he has to go around. Sometimes he's like 1 minute fast. And I'm like,
I had that on my car clock for like 5 minutes fast, and now one isn't, and one is, and I'm always like, okay, well, which one's
confusing.
Time? Yeah.
Because I'm always about a minute late to things, so I always put my clock 5 minutes flat. Mm-hmm. So if it says a minute late, I know I get got plenty
right.
of time to get there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But my desk computer isn't fast.
Yeah, my desk stuff like really bad.
Yeah, and so it always throws me off. Like, oh, I have a couple minutes.
No, you don't. Good one.
I know, because I was very, oh, I can squeeze in one more thing. That's why I'm always late. If I'm at home, it's like, oh, I can arrange this drawer or something. You know what I mean? If I'm at work, it's like, I can finish this one paper. Like, I just push everything to it. Maximizing my time. What's your next question?
I was thinking about that one.
Well, you do, let me know, because I'll walk there with you so you can help find it. It's
okay.
It's
okay.
Yeah, I thought that one sounded really interesting, because I did that one in the Congo yesterday.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and get us started. I have a feeling that there's going to be more people that come in. I don't even know if I need this. As we go, but I wanted to make sure that we get started on time because we have some really great presentations, and I wanted to start with an introduction of both of our speakers and the session. So to get us ready, my name is Heidi Deutsch. I am a program manager at the National Association of County and City Health Officials, and I work in the Public Health Infrastructure and Systems Division, which a lot of the projects that we're going to be talking about today sort of stem out of, not all of them, but some of them. So the session today is we're going to be looking at a variety of different approaches that have been used in creating, sustaining, and improving regional collaborations. So there have really been a number of pressures that have required or have led to an increased need for regional collaborations across jurisdictional lines. And for some, it's really been an issue of geography. There have been a lot of disparate or scattered populations that have created challenges for some individual health departments to provide the essential public health services across these large jurisdictions. Also, cuts in funding. A lot of times when I go to conferences, I hear a lot from local health departments that have challenges in funding each year. But recently, this last year and currently, I hear a lot more about the challenges of funding cuts. And this has led to cutbacks in resources and the increased need for economies of scale when it comes to delivering services. And also, emergency response preparedness has really had an impetus for many jurisdictions in increasing regionalization. So really, this session is going to highlight how local health departments or how local jurisdictions have used four different tools: the National Public Health Performance Standards Program, the MAP process, the Operational Definition Standards, and Project Public Health Ready criteria for improving essential public health service delivery through regional collaborations. We have three speakers today who will share with us their experiences using these different methods to develop regional collaborations or to improve existing ones. I'm going to introduce the speakers in a minute, but first, in order to really set the context for the session, I wanted to go over the individual methods that they've used, just so that you have a little bit of an understanding of what these different tools are, because some of you might be familiar with one or a couple of them, but perhaps not all of them. So I wanted to give a little bit of background about all of the different tools. Wrong button. Okay, so but before I get started, and so that we're not doing this throughout the entire presentation, I just wanted to sort of do the full disclosure that explicitly stating that we have no personal financial relationships to disclose that have commercial interests, so none of us do. All right, so the first tool I wanted to introduce, which is more of a process, is the MAP process. MAP it stands for Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnerships. It's a community-wide strategic planning tool for improving public health, as well as an action-oriented process to help communities prioritize their public health issues, identify resources for addressing those issues, and then taking action. It's a full phase process. And on the screen, you have basically two graphics that illustrate the process. The first, or the top one, is a much more academic graphic. It has the six phases of MAP in a linear fashion down the center of the graphic. And then it has the four arrows around the outside showing that are the different assessments involved in the MAP process, showing that data collection and the variety of different kinds of data are really a driving force behind the MAP process. The second graphic is a much more community-friendly graphic, and it shows the six phases of the MAP process on a path that leads to a healthier community. So that's kind of our illustrations of the process. But MAP is really a new approach to public health planning and practice. Rather than an agency-driven initiative that a lot of planning processes are, in MAP, the agency really facilitates a community-based process that results in a sustainable community-wide strategic plan. So it's not a plan for the agency, it's a plan for the entire community. The process also builds into action. It doesn't end with the creation of a plan, but leads to the action cycle, which includes both implementing the plan, but also evaluating a plan for continuous quality improvement. It also is based in strategic planning. It's not operational or day-to-day planning. It's strategic because it focuses on the root causes of a lot of the issues that causes some of our negative health outcomes in our communities, and it moves away from a siloed funding-driven strategies that's based on, because it is based on four unique different assessments. And finally, it's based on partnerships. It's not a strategic plan for a specific agency, but it's based on the entire public health system. So all the different agencies, organizations, and individuals within the community that contribute to delivering the 10 essential public health services. So MAP is referred to as a local public health system performance improvement process. One of the assessments in MAP is the local public health system assessment, which assesses the capacity of the public health system to address the 10 essential public health services. The tool that is used for this particular assessment in the MAP process is the local instrument of the National Public Health Performance Program. And because our presenter is going to probably reference this tool, I wanted to give a little bit of an introduction to this particular instrument as well. So when we talk about the National Public Health Performance Standards Program, we're actually talking about three different instruments. There's a state instrument, a local instrument, and a governance instrument. In MAP, they use the local instrument version. These instruments are all based around the 10 essential services and were developed to help systems see how well they do against optimal standards in promoting performance improvement. So this is for the entire system, all these different agencies coming together to see how collectively, as a system, we are doing in delivering the 10 essential public health services. So over the last decade, the National Public Health Performance Standards Program and MAP have provided the means for building community and regional partnerships and improving the delivery of the 10 essential public health services within and across jurisdictional lines. In particular, the performance standards help assesses the system's capacity, and MAP provides the framework for applying the standards, the National Public Health Performance Standards data towards public health system improvement. Okay, so today you're going to hear from the first presenter, Natalie Polenko, about how MAP was used in New Jersey to bring together not only multiple sectors within the community who all contribute to the delivery of the 10 essential public health services, but also how multiple local health departments came together to take a regional approach to community-based strategic planning. So Natalie Polenko is a manager in the Office of Public Health Infrastructure within the Division of Health Infrastructure and Preparedness and Emergency Response at the New Jersey Department of Health and Senior Services. This is Natalie. That's a mouthful for me. In this role, Natalie is responsible for providing leadership in the advancement of New Jersey's local performance improvement initiatives and preparing the field for voluntary accreditation. She serves as a policy advisor on the development of local public health systems, especially around efforts to support the development and of enhanced collaboration within the public health system in New Jersey. So Natalie has served as a senior planner for a large metropolitan health district, assistant project director for the development of a national registry of electronic health registry and information, health policy consultant for a national study on policy and practices for mental health reform, and executive director of an internationally recognized voluntary organization for victims of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. Natalie received her master's in social work from the University of Toronto and a BA in psychology from Rutgers University. So I will talk a little bit about the other two instruments as well and introduce each of our speakers as I go along. Okay, so the second tool that we're going to be talking about today is the operational definition of a functional local health department, which we call for short OPDEF, but I won't do that. So the operational definition defines what everyone, regardless of where they live, should reasonably expect from governmental local public health. It comprises of standards that describe the local health department's functions as framed around the 10 essential public health services. and is serving as the framework for the national accreditation standards. There are approximately 250 indicators and corresponding evidence that were developed in a self-assessment tool to work with the operational definition so that the health departments can measure themselves against the standards in the operational definition. This tool is available from NACHO, and there's copies in the back table, and is titled the Local Health Department Self-Assessment Tool for Accreditation Preparation. The operational definition provides guidance on improving the public health agency's service delivery and preparing for national accreditation. So for jurisdictions with limited resources, working together to meet the operational definition standards offers a strategy to help local health departments collaborate regionally in order to improve public health service delivery. Our second speaker, then, is Alice Weingartner. Have I said that right? Want to make sure. Okay, good. and she's going to share her experience using the operational definition related to and related resources to develop regional partnerships in Kansas. Alice is deputy director of the Shawnee County Health Agency in Kansas. She began working at the County Health Agency in October of 2001 as the Community Relations Specialist. She served as the Emergency Preparedness and Community Outreach Officer for 4.5 years. She has also served as the facilitator for the Northeast Corner Regional Initiative and Regional Collaborative for eight different health departments. Alice currently serves as the Deputy Director for Operations and Response and has oversight over the business office, corporate compliance, grants, and special projects, as well as continuing to work closely on emergency preparedness issues. Big role. She serves as a facilitator for the Regional Capacity Building Project that is focused on regional cooperation to local health departments with accreditation standards in 2011. And so the last project that I want to introduce is Project Public Health Ready. And Project Public Health Ready is a recognition program for local and regional health departments. It basically prepares staff of local governmental public health agencies to respond and protect the public's health through three project goals focused on all hazards preparedness planning, workforce capacity development, and the demonstration of readiness through exercises or real emergency events. Project Public Health Ready is a set of national standards for preparedness based on a comprehensive list of criteria, which incorporates federal guidance such as NIMS, Emergency Services Functions 8 and 10, CDC preparedness metrics, and Homeland Security Exercises and Evaluation Program. So it's based on a lot of existing national standards. The criteria have been field tested by local health departments and remain the only known national standards for local public health department preparedness. It improves staff competencies by helping health departments conduct a training needs assessment to identify training gaps for staff and to identify staff roles during emergency preparedness planning. It develops health department capacity by requiring the development of plans, training, exercises, and fixed plans based on outcomes. And it requires increased collaboration among partnerships. Since 2003, Project Public Health Ready has helped local health departments and regions increase their preparedness capacity by equipping them with sustainable tools using a continuous quality improvement model. And the criteria allows health departments to individually and regionally assess and improve their capacity in terms of emergency preparedness and response planning, workforce capacity development, and exercises. Our final speaker then today is Jennifer Fahrenheit. Fryheit. I knew I was going to pronounce that wrong. Fryheit, who will share with you how their region was able to strengthen their relationship through the process of getting ready for Project Public Health Ready recognition. Jennifer is the Emergency Public Health Preparedness Program Coordinator for the Milwaukee. Milwaukee. Right, real quick, Waukesha County Consortium for Emergency Public Health Preparedness in Wisconsin. Just a little bit more. She guided her region to Project Public Health Ready Award in 2006, and Jen has assisted in regional situations and was the Regional Public Health Information Officer and Liaison Officer during the spring of 2008 measles outbreak. Jen works with numerous organizations and community agencies in directing collaborative projects towards overall emergency preparedness competence in public health, and she has participated in statewide and national initiatives, as well as presentations to a variety of audiences surrounding emergency preparedness and Project Public Health Ready success. Jen received her master's degree in wellness management and gerontology from Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana, and a Bachelor of Science in Health Education with honors from Illinois State University. So that's all the introductions, and for now, I would like to turn it over to Natalie to talk a little bit about her experience in New Jersey. No problem.
Ooh, good morning, everyone. although we don't have any relationships to disclose, I would like to express thanks to NACHO for their role in making this session happen, and particularly for enabling the state of New Jersey to participate in this way. So, like, what's the deal with this regional collaboration thing and partnerships? I mean, these are such great buzzwords, and whenever I hear these buzzwords, I know that they've got a lot of packaged stuff behind them. So what is this? What is this regional collaboration thing? You know, what I'm interested in knowing is two things, and I think that we're all interested in knowing. Does a system have the capacity to respond in the face of an overwhelming event? That's one thing that we might be interested in looking at for regional collaboration. And the other thing is if you've got limited resources, does a system have the capacity to leverage limited resources to improve the health of the population? And that's the lens through which I'm going to be talking to you today about regional partnerships and regional collaboration. Specifically, what I'm going to do is tell you about how New Jersey used the MAP tool and how that has specifically impacted on regional collaboration. There are some other things that have enabled that, and I'll tell you a little bit about that as well, but I think that New Jersey is uniquely positioned. I think one of the reasons that I'm here today is that I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that New Jersey is the only state that has used MAP statewide in every single county. So that's, which is the left or the right? The left. There we go. So New Jersey is passionately and wholeheartedly devoted to home rule. You're supposed to smile. Thanks. But New Jersey has begun to move past home rule. I'm sure that every single one of you here comes from a state that's also devoted to home rule. And it doesn't help that things are funded from local realty taxes. But New Jersey has begun to move past home rule. And the question is how did we begin to move past home rule? And how did we begin to move towards regional collaborations? How did we get to the point where we actually have all 21 counties producing a community health improvement plan? 4 years ago, this did not exist. 4 years ago, that did not exist. How did we go from 111 health departments being very much insularly focused on their own parochial interests to what I would call a proto-system of health departments working with one another, whereas before they would practically not even speak to one another, even if they saw each other at a meeting. So the question is, how did we move beyond this home rule paradigm that boxes in so many health departments? Well, I have to say that the 10 essential services framework was absolutely the underpinning this was the thing that enabled the paradigm shift in New Jersey, and I'm guessing that that's probably the case in other states as well. Without the 10 essential services, without the agreement that this is something that all health departments need to offer, we would not have been able to do the next thing, which was rewrite the regulations that govern public health. The regs are supported by statute, but the regs that had been in place in New Jersey for public health dated back from the 1960s. You know, you will do food inspections, you will, you know, do, you know, immunizations, you know, you do all that stuff. In the 1990s, with the advent of the 10 essential services, what people realize is that we have to rewrite the regulations to reflect those 10 essential services, so that's what we did. It was a very lengthy statewide consensus building process that was undertaken, and then in 2003 the new regs were adopted, and they're called Public Health Practice Standards for Performance of Local Boards of Health in New Jersey. The importance of these regs and what enabled us to move towards regional collaboration is that they literally mirror the 10 essential services. I cannot tell you how important this has been in terms of moving us forward. And what's inside those regs is also important. And there are a couple of key components in the regs that have enabled us to move more coherently towards this proto-system or regional collaboration or partnerships or whatever you want to call it, rather than 111 health departments working solo. Those three things are something called governmental public health partnerships. That's the first enabler. The second enabler was the fact that every single governmental public health partnership had to do a community health assessment, and that's in the 10. That's in the operational definition, which is a reflection of the 10 essential services. And every GPHP had to do a community health improvement plan. It was like a non-negotiable. This is a deliverable that everyone had to provide. And the reg said it is strongly recommended that you use MAP as your process. If you had something better, you know, it would have been considered, but it was strongly recommended. So I'm going to talk about each one of these enablers briefly, just to tell you how they impacted on moving towards regionalization. So what is this governmental public health partnership thing? Really, it's the governmental public health partnerships is simply all the health officers in a county coming together. That's it. They created bylaws for themselves. They were required to create bylaws. And in fact, one of these GPHPs went on to become a 501(c), which has significantly impacted on their ability to bring in grant funding. I know some other of these governmental entities are looking at doing the same thing. And there are only 10 GPHPs, although we have 21 counties, there's only 10 GPHPs in New Jersey. And why? Because these are the counties that have more than one health department in them. If you only have one health department, who are you going to sit around the table with? Yourself? No. Okay. So we have a very odd mix in New Jersey. There's 8 or 9 county health departments with a single health department, and the rest have multiple health departments. So where there are multiple health departments, and as I referenced before, historically these folks, you know, they kind of got together, they drink coffee, and this is their own words. I'm not, you know, casting aspersions on the willingness of health officers to collaborate with one another, but in their own words, they get together, they drink coffee, talk about like the local issues, and, you know, and that was it. With the creation of GPHPs that had a specific purposeful mandate to do regional planning, the texture and the complexion of the conversations that took place at these meetings began to change dramatically. One of the interesting, the regulations also had as a companion document a very lengthy list of things that these GPHPs would do, and there's a couple copies of those of this companion document at the back of the room, and it tells the health officers exactly what they're supposed to do. Let me just read to you one of the things that the GPHPs were intended to do. The GPHP will review existing capacities and expertise of all local health departments in the area and determine what services need to be developed and what existing services can be shared. This is language from 2003. I mean, this was so radical. I mean, health departments were looking at each other and saying, you want us to talk about sharing services? You could be out of your mind. Well, needless to say, this has not happened as yet. But this needs to be an evolutionary process where there is, you know, an agreement that this is something that we want to do, and it's a negotiation. So this radical proposal to look at services and determine what can be shared hasn't really been taken up by GPHPs, although there is one group that has actually done an inventory of services. They haven't gotten to the point of sharing services yet, but that's another story. So this is the GPHPs. The creation of GPHPs was foundational to moving towards greater partnerships. So we have purposeful partnerships in every single county of New Jersey now where there had been none before. the requirement to do a community health improvement plan was the second thing that really moved New Jersey towards greater regionalization and greater functional collaboration. And that's the requirement to do these plans. So every single county, and this is, for me, this is so major. The fact that every county in New Jersey has a community health improvement plan that identifies the priorities, public health priorities. These were developed not just with the local health department sitting around the table talking to each other, although, mind you, in 2004, when I was working with one of the counties locally, and I said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to put together a process to put together a CHIP, the health officer said, well, why do we need to consult with the community? We know what the issues are. Hello? So every single one of the CHIPs was developed using the MAP process, which presumes that you are going to bring all your partners together, and that's exactly what happened. Not only did they bring all their partners together, as a consequence, in New Jersey, the 111 health departments now have 1,200 formal partners sitting around the various tables. I'm talking about hospitals, FQHCs, not-for-profits, religious organizations, all levels of government. I mean, just the list goes on and on and on. From 4 years ago being kind of, you know, solo flyers to now being members of consortia that have real significant other players around, this is a major paradigm shift for New Jersey, major. And so we have these 21 community health improvement plans that are now in the action cycle, most of them. Some of them are actually beginning to evaluate their work as well. And as I said, they used the MAP process. There were four things that the state of New Jersey did that really enabled and supported the use of MAP, and they had to do with funding. One, in all 21 counties, we put in place a partnership coordinator, a facilitator, if you will. For about 4 years, the funding came from the CDC bioterrorism grant, and as many of you know, that money is starting to decrease, and so the support for those positions is also shifting as a result of that. But for the first four most important years, every county had a facilitator. You've got to have a warm body. You've got to have a devoted, smart, warm body to help facilitate the MAP process. If anybody has not done it yet, you know you need a facilitator. We also provided $3,000 per health department for 4 years to go towards the MAP process. Doesn't seem like a lot of money, but in counties that had multiple health departments, if they pooled their money, they actually were able to buy great resources. So the facilitator, you know, small pot of funding. My office also had liaisons, state employees who acted as liaisons to the GPHPs for technical assistance, for support, you know, communication and so on. That was also a significant investiture. And of course, if you don't have the support of the local health officers, if you don't have that leadership, if people don't understand why this is important and why this is necessary, it's not going to get off the ground. So I need to underscore the fact that in every county, there was a lead health officer or a group of health officers who really got why this was important and where we were going with this. Absolutely foundational. So the question is what's different now? What's different in 2008 versus 1998 when we were embarking on this path? I'm going to talk to you about three things: structures, process, and attitudes. In terms of structure, there's a GPHP in every county that has more than one health department. Radical. Absolutely radical. We have a community health improvement plan for every county. One of the things that's significant about having a CHIP is that after we did a roll-up of all the community health priorities in each one of the CHIPs, we discovered that there's an enormous degree of consistency around the state. So what are the top issues in New Jersey? Substance abuse and mental health, access to care, obesity, nutrition, and fitness, cardiovascular disease, and cancer. So when you have that degree of agreement after you do a community health improvement plan for your local regions, you see that there is an opportunity to leverage resources statewide. So now we're going to be undertaking the statewide using the NPHPSP statewide assessment tool to see how the state level partners are functioning. So if you do the CHIPS on a local level, it might drive other processes. And once, and my colleague Kevin McNally, who's here today, will be leading the statewide assessment. It's possible that that may also drive the creation of a state health improvement plan. Now, for some of you who have state health improvement plans, this is like not a big deal. I know Pennsylvania's had a state health improvement plan for at least 10 years, and that's a really great thing. But for New Jersey, this would be a real step forward in terms of not only locally people working together and regionally collaborating, but to collaborate as a state would be, I think, a major move forward. And as I said, there are 1,200 partner organizations working on public health priorities, whereas that did not exist 4 years ago. In terms of programs and processes, one of the outputs is that, as I mentioned, there are counties where health departments were literally so embattled, so non-functional, so not talking to each other, that the very first deliverable, the fact that this one of these counties, the health departments are now working on shared SOPs. The one county with 14 health departments agree, we're all going to use the same forms, we're all going to use the same protocols, we're all going to use the same, you know, measurables for, say, you know, food inspections, or we're all going to do the same thing for reducing mental health stigma. Is absolutely amazing to me. They're applying collaboratively for grants, and they've actually resulted in shared staff, like health educators for a region and epidemiologists for a region. They're launching countywide programs where all the health departments are working collaboratively together on major systemic issues like mental health stigma, getting nutrition and fitness programs and reduction of obesity back into schools. And some GPHPs have actually been very successful in obtaining very expensive regional assets. I mean, TB clinics are not cheap. One GPHP, on the strength of its community health improvement plan and the evidence in it, was able to obtain and negotiate a TB clinic for the region, as well as a dental clinic, also not a cheap asset. So the CHIPS were absolutely foundational in getting those assets in place. And finally, in terms of attitudes and thinking, Kevin and I, during the course of the summer, did a key informant interview with the chairs of all the GPHPs, or the former chairs. And it was more of an exploratory piece of research. And these are just some of the things that they shared with us in terms of what's different now. You as a health officer, leader in your community of your GPHP, what's different now? Well, they reported that their shift in focus is to the broader community. They're not just thinking about their own towns. This is a very important mental shift that would not have been possible had they not undertaken the MAP process and worked together through the GPHP. They do have a heightened sense of responsibility for this broader public. Also an important outcome. They have a better understanding of non-governmental public health players and providers. Before, you know, the local health departments would complain about the hospitals, how hospitals don't understand what we need to do, or the United Way, they just don't get us. Once the dialogue was established through the MAP process and people could put on the table what their respective issues were, and they really got to know each other, not just as, oh, that's the hospital person, but this is a real person with real constraints in their work, this is what their priorities are, and so on, they began to see each other really as colleagues. And this is priceless. The fact that they themselves, the local health officers, were telling us that they sensed that the regard of others, hospitals, FQHCs, and so on, had improved as a result of their leadership work, gave me the sense that for the first time in the longest time, our health officers were beginning to feel empowered. And this also is priceless. They reported that they felt like true leaders. Henry Ford says that, you know, coming together is a beginning, staying together is progress, and working together is success. And I really do believe that in New Jersey we're closer to understanding how we can better leverage those very, very limited resources in New Jersey to improve health outcomes, working more collaboratively as a system, and coming closer to actually beginning to have a platform from which we can substantively impact on population health outcomes. Without all those pieces, I don't think we would have been able to do that as a system. MAP is an absolutely phenomenal tool. It provides a shared language, a shared lexicon, so it doesn't matter where I am in New Jersey. If someone's done MAP, everybody understands where you are. In fact, it doesn't matter where you are in the country. You can talk MAP to anyone who's done MAP, and you'll understand one another, and it's a very leveraged thing to have done. It definitely has accelerated regional collaboration and partnership in New Jersey, and I thank you for your attention and for the privilege of sharing the work that we've done in New Jersey today with you.
Good morning. I thought it might be helpful to start off a little bit about Kansas. I don't know how many people have been there, but there has been some information that's come out about how you define a rural health department, and I think one of the things that's really interesting is if you look at the state of Kansas, we have 5 urban counties in our state, and if you look at the comparison of the population density, when you have almost 33 people per square mile in Kansas versus almost 80 people in the United States, we get pretty rural the farther west we move. And another great example of that is this map that shows just how our population is shifting. And this is why regionalization has become so important in Kansas, because we really know we've got to build population density in order to be able to meet those public health services within our state. One of the things, a little bit of groundwork for what we did in our state, is we did some communications research back in 2006 to really define public health. We wanted to make sure that our policymakers, our business leaders, our community-based organizations really understood what public health is and what the role is we have in the community. And it really was very much a grassroots level. And with that, we came up with a tagline, and that tagline that was tested and really resonated with that group is healthy people build strong communities. And so that is the tagline that we have marketed and use across the state to communicate public health. We also identified values, what's important to Kansans. And one of the big things that came out of that is that all Kansans should be protected by that standard array of public health services. Well, what is that standard or array of services? Well, we are using the operational definition, and we're using that across the state. And what I'm going to talk about are 2 regions in particular that are applying that OPDEF, as I've learned the lingo, in Kansas. What we did find as we started looking at this is our local leaders really didn't understand, or our state leaders really didn't have a good understanding of public health. And so this has really given some foundation to work on. And as Natalie mentioned, it gives that consistency of language, that consistency of vocabulary. So now we're taking the notion of applying these standards across our 15 regions. And these 15 regions were established, like many regions across the country, through those bioterrorism dollars that originally came. And we know those dollars are decreasing, and so what is it we want to do to help sustain those regions? Well, we want to help them build capacity, and we feel we can do that with the operational definition. As we went through that communications research project, what we found through the assessment of those leaders is that we know there's 10 essential public health services, but these were the top 5 that really resonated with our public health leaders. So this is really where our focus has been, but we obviously will continue to meet capacity in all 10 of those services. The second thing that we found, as in many states, is we are a very strong home rule state. We are a decentralized system with 100 health departments in 105 counties. We have a couple systems where we have that have consolidated, which really is that taboo word in probably many states, as it is in Kansas. We also have found that public health funding is an issue. We are a state that has very high level of funding for local dollars. We are very low in state funding, and we are low in federal funding. So we really have to figure out where can we bring our strong home rule and our value of providing that strong wide array of services to public health. And we think that that can happen by regional cooperation. And what we're doing is we're taking that operational definition, I'm going to let these things roll up, and by regional cooperation, we can find that balance and we can help build capacity across a region versus 105 counties or 100 health departments in the state having to do it individually. And how are we going about doing that? When we started this project, we called it functional regionalization. And again, we market tested that word with our policymakers, and they really didn't understand it. And so through that testing, through that communications testing, we changed and shifted to regional cooperation, and that is what our focus is now. One thing that we do stress to our leaders is it's not consolidation. There's great fear that through this regional cooperation, we're going to lose our own local flavor within our communities, but that's not the case. We know that some functions have to remain at the local level, but can we identify those functions that can be done regionally? And that's where we came up from, moved from functional regionalization to regional cooperation. We want to figure out how we can apply some of those essential public health services to the people that we serve within our communities, but then also let our local leaders maintain their own individualness as well. It also gives peace of mind to those local leaders because you're not taking away their ability to lead and make decisions within their communities. What we hope to find is that we'll have that increased efficiencies. We know as money decreases and resources decrease, we think we can increase efficiencies. We can have increased access to public health services. And then one of the emphasis of our project has been really applying quality improvement. We're really trying to shift in how people think and do business. And so that has been not without its challenges, as many of you probably experience. One of the things that we've also noticed, there really has been that a lot of our leaders thought of public health as direct service care. That is really where the focus has been. And when you look at the essential public health services, it really is on something that's more invisible. And so that's why that education piece has become so critical. I'm going to talk about the phases of the project that we've been working on and how we've applied the operational definition. Through generous participation from NACHO and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, we've identified two regions in our state. And I know this is pretty hard to see, and I'll give you a website that you can go to see it. But what we've done is we've broken this project into three phases. And our first phase was to take the operational definition, take the metrics, and do an assessment of ourselves. We've identified those regions, and you can see right here we have the two regions. We have the northeast corner, which is actually the region that I facilitate with eight county health departments, a population of 260,000, and we do have an urban presence because we do have the state capital within our region in Shawnee County. The second region that has been part of this is the north central region, and they are a much more rural region. They have a much smaller population, plus a lot bigger area to cover. And so one of the things we really want to help people understand is through regional cooperation, it's not that consolidation of services where everybody's going to have to drive from the northern part of the region to the southern part of the region, which could be an hour plus drive. People don't want to do that. And so we want to make sure that some of those things remain at the local level as well. In our first phase of the project, what we did is we took the operational definition metrics, and is everybody familiar with those metrics? I know there's copies in the back. We actually used the first version of those metrics that came out, and each of us did an individual assessment as a local health department, and then those assessments were compiled so that we could look at our regional capacity and those regional results. We used a facilitator for this project. So that facilitator went to each county within these regions. And I would strongly, as Natalie noted as well, using a facilitator to do this, I think is really important because it gives you the opportunity to have everybody participate equally, and you don't have one director or one deputy director who's leading that facilitation and then not getting to participate. So what did we find out from that assessment? And again, consistency was what we did find happen across those two regions, that if we don't have the capacity to meet, if we don't have the funding to meet those capacities, then our capacities were pretty low. And that doesn't allow us to meet that first value. The good news was that there's consistency across the region. And with that, again, it makes it easier to plan. It makes it easier to share resources and share information. For our second part of our project, what we did is we then went in and looked at those capacities that we were low on, and there are about 12 capacities that came out of the assessment. And with those capacities identified, we then went back in as a region and used some tools to identify those capacities that we wanted to work on, and I'll talk about those in a second. Throughout the course of this project, some of the other things we're looking at is the legal implications of regional cooperation. Because we're a home rule state and we've got to keep those local leaders happy, we had to determine, are there any laws or regulations that we have to maintain or that we have to be aware of? And at this point, through that legal review, there aren't. And how we can establish this regional cooperation is through interlocal agreements. We currently have interlocal agreements that only address emergency preparedness issues, and so we're looking at the development of an interlocal agreement based on the 10 essential services. I don't see us moving towards statewide legislation for that, although it might make things easier. We also have an economic consultant who's looking at the financial and the economic impact of regional cooperation. That piece of our project is still ongoing, so I don't have anything to report at that point, but I'm sure as this project ends, there'll be a large report that'll come out and resources available for everyone to use. And then, of course, communication is so important, and keeping our partners, our local leaders informed of accreditation, of capacity building, of public health, and making sure that there's that consistent message. A little bit about each of the regions. The North Central region, the process they went through, again, there was consistency in those gaps identified. We don't have consistent community health assessments done across our counties. We don't have health improvement plans. We don't know or what all the data is that's out there or how to use it effectively. So each of us looked at those things, and we used quality improvement tools to really drill down to what the capacity is we wanted to work on. And this is how the North Central region worked through their process to develop that goal statement. As a region, they want to work on regional communication plan for the use of an education tool to provide an accurate, credible source of information to improve health outcomes, help define what public health is, and what resources are needed and services are provided. Once that region does that, that's something that can be applied to the other 14 regions across the state. So again, you don't have 14 regions or 97 health departments trying to figure that out. It's already done, and we can share these resources. For the Northeast corner, we worked through our assessment. We had a series of meetings. Again, facilitation is so important when you're going through a process like this. And using those quality improvement tools really helps you drill down to the root cause of some of those issues or some of those problems that you need to address. We went through several of our meetings. Again, we identified those key gaps, and those key gaps were consistent across the two regions. We really struggled back and forth between whether to use community health assessment as our capacity building or data. And what the thought was is that if we don't know what our data is, because we're not all using the same data sources, if we don't use our data consistently, why do we want to get more data in from a community health assessment? So that's where our focus came down to identifying data. So you can see our goal and our purpose was to develop a system or a plan to gather, compile, and integrate local data available in a consistent manner across the region, and identify those sources so that we're consistently using them, and so we're matching apples to apples versus apples to oranges. We did draft a strategic plan, and of course, now we're at the place where we have to decide as a region, are we going to take that strategic plan and move it forward? or are we going to put it in a folder and stick it on the shelf? And that's where it became difficult. Those were some difficult decisions for those administrators to make, and they're difficult because there's no dollars attached to building that capacity. There's no dollars attached to hiring more staff. We have to be able to do these types of things within the services, within the resources that we already have. And so that's why I put the to be continued. Because the last question I asked our group the last time we were together is, what are we going to do with the strategic plan? Are we committed to making this work? And their answer was yes. So we're getting ready to move into those next phases. Phase three of this project, and this is what is going to be the benefit across the state or across the country. There's actually Kansas and Massachusetts are both being looked at for this particular project of how to apply that operational definition. And so by the end of December, early next year, a report will come out providing an assessment of this process and what has happened. Of course, there have been lots of challenges. Some of those challenges are, in particular, for the region that I represent, which has that urban presence, we sometimes have a lot more resources available. And so we may be ready to move forward before some of those other counties within our region are ready to move. And so we really have to walk that fine line of communicating, not pushing, but pulling a little bit. We know that money has been a big concern, our economy. We see lots of budgets being cut. But one of the things that I hold on to, and I hold on to it really tightly because it was said by one of our strong administrators in our region, is we have to start thinking differently. We have to start doing business differently. And if this administrator, who's been in her position for the last 20 years, can see that and think that way with this new information coming out, then I just have to very carefully keep pulling her along, because we're going to get there, and this is going to help us move towards accreditation, meeting those accreditation standards. I think the operational definition, when it originally came out, I think, and we went through the metrics things, one of the stories I think that was really interesting was that you look at those metrics and they were very overwhelming. And some of the wording that was in there, a lot of those rural health departments, you know, there were things like, do you have a system to collect disease data? Well, when you hear system, their thought was system. Well, where is a rural health department director's system for collecting disease data? It's right here. And so this health department director would go into a beauty shop. She was told how her next-door neighbor who runs a licensed child care facility, and again, she only knows that because her system tells her that, has had an outbreak of chickenpox. And so she now knows she needs to go and start following chickenpox on her system. So it was helping those rural communities, those rural and semi-rural administrators understand that when you look at that metrics, system isn't always defined by the electronic piece. And so that's been a very big education process for our administrators. That's not Kansas. That's what we wish it looked like. We're moving from flat to bumpy and hilly. We recently had a summit in Kansas where we brought together our county administrators, county commissioners from about 30 counties. So we had a county commissioner and a health department director. And we really wanted to start educating them on what accreditation is and why it's important to public health. And we gave them three options to think about of how we could get there. They could be on their own, which probably your more urban health departments could do. We could consolidate, which of course they all went like this, or we can work with regional cooperation. And so it's that group of health departments coming together to work collaboratively to achieve those accreditation standards so that we are being economical and politically viable within our communities. And I think what was important to note, and one of the biggest learning moments to note from that summit, was that when you look at those when you look at that operational definition, the places you can regionalize and use regional resources are the public health services that are invisible. If you're talking about direct service care, you can't regionalize very easily. That it's just not easy to do, particularly when you have to drive those distances. But if you're looking at things like your data collection, if you're looking at community health assessment, all of those things require facilitation, and those work much easier through regional cooperation and regional resources. So these are the things that we're looking at after we finish our first strategic plan related to data collection, and as the North Central does their communications project. We know that we need to do these things. Once we have a community health assessment, needs assessment done, that just aligns us with so many of those other operational definition standards that we're going to be able to check them all off and say we meet them. Building relationships with academia may be a little bit tougher for our more western part of the state, but again, it's figuring out how to define academia that meets that community's needs, not what we think it means in New York City, New Jersey, or Lawrence, Kansas, where you have the University of Kansas. What does that mean for Western Kansas? I will invite you to visit this website. This is where all of the information from this project is being documented. All of these diagrams and everything are on there as well. The Kansas Association of Local Health Departments has been very involved in making sure that Kansas moves forward with capacity building, moves forward with accreditation, and that, again, it really has to be done jointly. We don't have the capacity, we don't have the resources in our state to do it 100 times repeated. We have to look at doing it collectively.
Okay, I'm going to talk to you a bit about emergency preparedness regionalization. However, as you'll see throughout the presentation, it definitely does not focus just on emergency preparedness. While that helped us to form better standardization across our region, it was completely used, full integration across all the functions and services of public health. So I will be showing you some examples of that. Just a bit about our region is that we're the Milwaukee Waukesha. It's a two-county, most densely populated area of Wisconsin. 14 local health departments service that two-county area. So between those 14, we have 450 full-time equivalent positions serving 1.5 million population approximately. And that covers urban and suburban and just a bit of rural. We have a lake border, and we're also very integrated in the Chicago-Milwaukee corridor. We're 90 miles apart. So that presents different opportunities and challenges with evacuation and other emergency preparedness functions. Our typology mix is a mix just as that. We're coordinated in that each of the local health agencies respond on their own. Especially the larger ones like the City of Milwaukee can definitely respond on their own as far as services. But then we also found that because of our media market, and public health isn't our media a lot, so we had to be very standardized in our approaches because what one health department may be doing, the public will expect the other health departments to do. So we are also standardized in that we already do share and we are very interoperable with some of our services because we are in a tight geographic region. And then we also, as well, sometimes, rarely, but sometimes we're moving more toward this, is the centralization of resources so that everybody can achieve all of those essential services, especially with regard to emergency preparedness. And this is just a visual image of Milwaukee County is the one on the right with 13 local health departments servicing just that county, and Waukesha County has one county health department for the whole entire county. So Milwaukee County, very urban, and then Waukesha County, suburban and rural. So you understand. Our region, Project Public Health Ready, is definitely a tool that can be used to help form regions. However, not in the year that it takes to get PPHR accreditation. We found that there were several regions across the country who attempted that, but it was very difficult if you haven't already been working in a region to achieve that within a year. So it's definitely something that can work to help generate a region, but is much more apt to regions who are already formed. So our regional entities existed prior to emergency preparedness. We had tobacco, maternal child health consortia that all the health officers worked together, and they were very used to that. However, emergency preparedness flung everybody in a much more rapid pace to working in a region, especially because of all the dollars and because we had dedicated staff, the warm bodies, as Natalie mentioned, to work on that, and that was essential to have that staff to be able to do that. So we have 12 consortia around the state of Wisconsin, and the state health department decided that it was best that these consortia form with who their natural partners are. So the local health departments actually picked their boundaries with who they work with. For our region, it was simple because of our media market, which drives everything, so we chose that region. We also had, before we did Project Public Health Ready, we had our interlocal agreements, our memorandum of understanding, our mutual aid agreements, our bylaws. We had a governance structure, a board, and an executive committee. So we had all of this formed ahead of time, which definitely helped for us to be able to achieve Project Public Health Ready. So it was a formalized structure of how we share resources, even as far back as the 70s, and in the early 90s with Cryptosporidium in Milwaukee, but in 2003, I'm sorry, with monkeypox, the first time that was seen in the Western Hemisphere, we shared resources and worked in a standardized incident command fashion before we were really used to calling it that. We had a regional response plan developed before Project Public Health Ready. It was definitely not good, and Project Public Health Ready helped us to make that much better. We did regional trainings and exercises, and like I said, we had dedicated staff. So this was all before Project Public Health Ready, which really helped us jump to that accreditation level, if you will, for emergency preparedness. So what we did in 2006 is we took the CDC objectives, and every year the CDC objectives were very disparate, in their own silos, as you will, for each of the objectives we had to do for CDC. And we took those and basically just folded them into Project Public Health Ready, because Project Public Health Ready went way beyond and covered all the pieces of emergency preparedness. So then the CDC objectives sort of just became a little sidebar because we put all of our energy into PPHR. We restructured our pre-existing consortium subcommittees in order to fit around the three main areas of planning, competency and training, and exercise slash real event, which we have sustained to today. It has really, really helped to take all of those CDC objectives, NIMS, HCEP, all of those things, and put them on a clear road, a clear path for how we should function more efficiently. It enhanced our standardization through all of our 14 local health departments, and it brought about more detailed discussion and plans. We always had partners come to our table, never really had great use for them, didn't use them appropriately, and Project Public Health Ready really showed us where we needed to beef up those parts of our partner plans, who was responsible for what roles and functions in different type of emergencies, and it really solidified in public health's mind what our role was, but then also in our partners what public health's role was. So it definitely helped across all of our partners. It displayed the interconnectedness as far as that roadmap I was talking about. It took all of these pieces and put them all together, and that has drastically helped us through today as far as, even though we were Project Public Health Ready certified in 2006, it has moved us so far ahead to today to keep that momentum going. And it took us further than the CDC objectives ever might have, so it really has every year pushed us farther and farther ahead. So just a bit of the lessons learned through our Project Public Health Ready experience is that there are many, many pieces. It's an overwhelming amount of work to do in 1 year. However, with dedicated staff to it and buy-in from all the health officers, which we've also talked about, it's necessary for work to get done, but it definitely is a lot of work. However, we were encouraged by NATO to focus on one richly done component. For us, it was our competency and training assessment and then plan that came after that. So with that done very, very well, the next year we could focus a little bit more on plans, and the next year we could focus a little bit more on exercises. So we really put all of our time and energy into one component, but that spilled over into everything else. As I mentioned before, the better collaboration with our partner agencies, this definitely helped that. Adhering to work plans and timelines was something that is necessary because it is a great amount of work that must be achieved within a year's time. And commitment is necessary. The one thing it did show us through all of our meetings we were able to go to throughout that year to see where were all the other people that were going through Project Public Health Ready, what things could we share and learn from each other. It was a great national resource sharing opportunity, and it showed us that we were in line with the rest of the nation as far as our region and also as our state, that we were behind in some things, ahead in other things, but that we really were progressing along, whereas before we were doing these CDC objectives and we're on the SNS listserv and we can see what other people are doing, but it really showed us where we sat as far as what we need to improve upon and as far as our baseline. I give this last bullet as an example. One thing was that we had in Wisconsin a lack of a really comprehensive learning management system and some other systems tools, if you will. And this is why NACHO going toward the state health departments becoming Project Public Health Ready is really essential and is going to be really helpful for the future of Project Public Health Ready, in that there are so many things such as the state regulations or the statutes and changing those that can really help local public health agencies, not just in emergency preparedness, but to achieve more regionalization. We weren't able to do that simply because we were the region of 14 local public health departments, but pushing state health departments to become more Project Public Health Ready as well will help push some of those issues that will aid local health departments. So this was just one piece. As a region, we didn't have the funding or mandate to get a learning management system. However, if a state health department was assisting with that, that would be a big help as well, too. So just to carry this to the real world, this last spring, we had the big measles outbreak in Wisconsin. And this is actually a picture of our command post that we manned up. You will see they were all wearing green that day. I don't know why. Oh, you can't really see it very good. But we have the person in the far back who is our consortium epidemiologist. So he is shared, actually, among all 14 of the agencies. We have three dedicated staff, myself, who's the coordinator, an epidemiologist, and then a project specialist. And then in this picture, we have two of our health officers from two of our suburban communities, Greenfield and Franklin. It was beautiful to watch all the work that we did in Project Public Health Ready. It almost really did bring a tear to my eye to see everybody coming together, putting out regional media messages that everybody bought into, organizing regional immunization clinics for MMRs. Our line lists were regional. Everybody put into, that's where our epidemiologists came into play. We did all of these things. We had quarantine orders that went across the borders. There were some errors with that that we're fixing now, but we did do things that were very regional. We held regional press conferences. We did consortium-wide teleconferences where every day where we updated on the situation and the new cases, and so it was all of that work of Project Public Health Ready and Incident Command, NIMS, all coming into play for this real event in a regional fashion, and so it worked very, very well. We modified all of our ICS forms to be more public health specific, so if something said from NIMS helicopter landing site, that's where we changed to say mass clinic site or something of that nature. And we definitely developed the structures for our trigger points for when to activate the consortium or the region, if you will, as far as incident command. We had done it several times in the past for the pertussis outbreak of 2004 and 5, mumps in 2006, but it was really this measles this past year that that helps us to formalize that regional structure. So it was a good test. Just for visualization, this was our incident command structure, only using those tools that you need to use in an emergency. So we did not activate every function, but we actually had our incident commander, which was our Franklin health officer. I served as the liaison and PIO for the region. We had our medical advisors for each of our health departments that worked together. Our operations was the Greenfield Health Department. Our finance administration was our Wauwatosa Health Department. So we had the various health departments sitting in each of these roles and working together. And then the Epi Investigation Branch was our consortium staff. So we used an outreach education group who developed those materials and containment and prevention group who developed those materials. So this was how we put it all together during a real event. So a little bit about PPHR statewide is that because our region became Project Public Health Ready, we have definitely been doing a lot of pulling, maybe a little bit of pushing, to try to get the rest of our local health departments surrounding us, who also share our media market, as well as the rest of the state, to become Project Public Health Ready. As I said, it works much better. Our region is now, because we've had to create things and develop things on our own, we're a little bit more disconnected now from the rest of the state, so we're really trying to bring everybody up to that baseline standard. They have, however, recrafted the CDC objectives to fit around the three areas of Project Public Health Ready, planning, training, and exercising. And then we do have our statewide response plan, which we develop at the state level, send it down to the regional levels for the tweaking based upon different regional things, whether you're urban or rural within the state. And then that goes down to each local level where they tweak it yet still for their own municipal needs. So at least there is still some statewide standardization as far as our response plans. And that was also based off of Project Public Health Ready. We slid that in. They didn't know about it. We have our competency and training plan, and that is now being restructured to coordinate with our FEP, our Public Health Emergency Plan, which is coordinated with Project Public Health Ready. So we're getting on Project Public Health Ready without them even knowing it. And then we do all of our drills and exercises around HCP and the CDC performance measures, much as Project Public Health Ready. So it's not just Project Public Health Ready doing its own thing in this silo. It is really fully integrated with emergency preparedness, and it, as I said, it spills over into all of our other functions in public health. And that is just a bit about mine, so I'll turn it back over to you, if you.
First, I want to thank the three of you for coming out. These were great presentations. So now I want to sort of turn it over to see if there's any questions from you all. No questions? Well, I have questions, so that's okay. I prepared. Just the first question that I had in listening to the presentations, and if anybody else has questions, please jump in as well. Alice, I wanted to ask you first, how were the counties identified for each of the regions? Because I was sort of mentally drawing a box. I'm like, that's not a perfect box. So how were they sort of coming together in those regions?
I'll stand up. So yeah. This is behind the system.
The counties, the regions in Kansas were self-selected. They were given three criteria. One criteria that there be a minimum of three counties, that those counties be contiguous, and that they sign an interlocal agreement. And so they, again, it was all from the bottom-up approach, and they self-selected. Some of those regions may have already existed around other program areas. Some of them may have had relationships from certain other events or situations, but it was definitely all self-selected.
And for the other regions within, or potential regions within Kansas, are there plans there, or have they begun to sort of start working together based on the two regions that you spoke about? Or?
There has been some of that work going on because of NACHO's development of the new, I don't even know what they're calling it now, the document that's in the back. Some counties are already going in and individually doing this and then bringing it back as their region to look at their assessment as a region versus just as an individual health department.
And just to sort of clarify some terminologies, the original version was the was considered a metrics, but we've actually created a new version 2, which is updated, and that's the local health department self-assessment, or how am I saying this again?
Right here.
Thank you. The local health department self-assessment tool for accreditation preparation. Thank you. See, it's too many words. Gets me tongue-tied. The second question, Natalie, I wanted to ask you, given the fact that there are preparedness funding cuts, what's the sort of the future for these regional collaboratives under MAP? Is there a future for them?
So I think that because there's so much forward motion in this, what we do with these 21 partnership coordinators, we have they used to be monthly meetings at the front end just to keep all the forward motion going, and then they started to become bi-monthly and then quarterly meetings and so on. And they're required as part of the grant to come to those meetings. If you get money to be a partnership coordinator, you got to come to the meeting. Well, at the last meeting that we had people coming who were not partnership coordinators from the counties, but who were the epidemiologists who had taken on the MAP function, the HERCs, who had taken on the MAP functions, the health officer who had taken on the MAP function. But the fact that there were 21 counties represented, even though they no longer had funding for the partnership coordinator, to me demonstrates a commitment to keeping this moving, an interest in forward motion. Okay. So it is going to devolve to a local responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if there's enough value added, that the next step might be to find in-kind contributions or actual hard resources contributed to a consortia or a MAP process from other partners.
Thank you very much. And then for you, I just had a question. From my limited experience with preparedness, some of our health departments have shared with us that, you know, they have these great plans, and this, they weren't necessarily Project Public Health ready, but they have these great plans. But once the emergency hit, sometimes the planning sort of went to these coordination sort of went to the wayside as personalities came forward. So when your plan sort of came into action, did you have a similar challenge, or did they pretty much follow the way that the planning had gone?
We had a similar challenge. However, that's where I say having the region was really formed before Project Public Health Ready with our MOUs, MAAs, which were the legal binding documents that held their feet to the fire. And nice. So while personalities, yes, did come forward, and we sort of had to craft outside of Project Public Health Ready a document that said, because immediately they start acting on what they normally used to do with just their local agency. Mm-hmm. So to help them remember what the coordination we all agreed upon and to really enact that, it was our quick and dirty checklist that was, for lack of a better name, what we called it, as far as remember to think about calling all of your partners, remember to initiate the teleconference line. I mean, the simple things like that so that they did act in a coordinated fashion, and that really helped.
Excellent. Penny.
We found we couldn't function any other way because our channels 4, 6, and 12, all of those, their broadcast region goes from, in Wisconsin, it's up Sheboygan, which is near Green Bay, you'll know Green Bay, to the border of Illinois. And so whatever gets put out, and because the city of Milwaukee is our biggest health department and that's where all the media is located in the city of Milwaukee, whatever happens in the city of Milwaukee or its surrounding area gets put out to the public, so in that whole region, and so the rest of the local health departments are always playing catch-up, saying, well, wow, I didn't know they were doing extra MMR clinics, or wow, I didn't know that they were enacting this or that, and so it really forced all the rest of the health departments to join together to say, we can't be playing catch-up, we can't be chasing the tail, mm-hmm. That's where it really forced them to come together in real events especially, but also for pre-planning to make sure that they were doing coordinated things. So we couldn't do it otherwise. We formed initially because of natural partnerships, that media market really drove all the rest of the regional planning.
Excellent. Any additional questions? Well, we're ending, go ahead.
Oh, sure.
I believe they are on that website. I believe they are.
Ours aren't posted, but you can get a hold of me and I can send them to you.
Yeah.
Additional questions? All right, well, thank you all very much for joining us.
That's in order to, what do you think you'll do next year?